From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams. For many victims of domestic violence, a doctor may be the first person outside a family to see the bruises and other injuries inflicted by abusers. But a report released today by the Institute of Medicine finds that most doctors get very little training in how to help these patients. NPR's Rachel Jones visited one medical school fighting that trend by training students to treat more than just physical wounds.
In a Washington, D.C. classroom, 15 students sit around a long conference table watching consultant Lynn McCoy tape large sheets of white paper to the walls. McCoy wants them to spend the next few minutes inside the mind of a woman who's being abused.
What are the risks to her if she stays in the relationship? And I want the other group to talk about what are the risks to her if she leaves the relationship, okay? And that one will go up here. So you all
It's the kind of scene you might expect in a psychology course or at a school of social work. But these 14 women and one man are learning to be doctors at Georgetown University Medical School. In groups of three near the sheets of paper, they hash out their theories.
A lot of people say, why doesn't she leave? Like the first question you ask, but I think it's true, staying and leaving, the risks and the tension and the difficulty in both
could be equal.
Are equal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes it very hard to pick one or the other. Okay, so make a list, risks if she stays.
The exercise is supposed to help medical students develop empathy for the abused patient. It's part of a course called Domestic Violence, How to Save a Life, developed in 1996 by Dr. Kim Bullock of Georgetown's Department of Family Medicine. The class was one of the first formal elective courses about domestic violence ever offered by an American medical school. Bullock became interested in the topic during her training on a reservation in New Mexico. She quickly realized she had no idea how to help abused patients with their physical and emotional problems. That feeling lingered as she finished her residency in the high-risk pregnancy unit at Georgetown Hospital.
During that period of time, I continued to see young women come in who had been injured, been battered, and my need to do something actually was accelerated by obviously seeing not only mothers who were injured, but their children who were injured.
Bullock did her own research and discovered that abuse was more common than many of the diseases she'd been taught to screen for. And she concluded that the biomedical model that teaches doctors to fix a physical problem didn't go far enough.
In a certain sense, we leave the psychology at the door and we focus on the biology of disease, and we see people as disjointed from their total selves.
She says this narrow focus doesn't encourage doctors to think outside the exam room or to ask the kinds of questions that might help them understand why an injury occurred and how to prevent it from happening again. John Stobo agrees. He's president of the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston and recalls an example from his time at Johns Hopkins in the early 1990s. Several hundred residents were presented with a sample case and asked to make a diagnosis.
We presented a woman who was a victim of family violence. And out of the 200 experienced and wise physicians in the audience, nobody was able to come up with a diagnosis indicating this woman was a victim of family violence.
Stobo co-chairs the committee that produced the report, entitled Confronting Chronic Neglect, the Education and Training of Health Professionals on Family Violence. It evaluated existing courses and curricula and found that most medical schools do have some form of training in family violence. But it also found that the training is often incomplete and instruction time minimal, a single lecture or film, for example. Ann Stobo says there's been little effort to find out if any of it works.
It's a staccato type of approach, and again, with very little evaluation as to whether it's having a beneficial impact.
The report calls for research centers that would establish the best ways to teach about domestic violence, but it stops short of recommending specific changes. For Bullock, though, it's clear that the teaching needs to push doctors to explore situations that might require them to take a risk. That's why she uses role-playing. Here, Bullock asks three students to play out a scene involving a battered woman, her husband, and a doctor, and then sets up a scenario.
The patient comes into your office, and she has walked into the door. That's the history. And on your exam, you find that she has a broken bone on the face, a bruise on her arm, and marks on the neck.
The students arrange their chairs at the end of the conference table and assume their roles. English Gonzalez, a second-year resident, plays the doctor. First-year student Imani Jackson plays the husband.
And I see this area here on your neck as well. Now, how did that occur?
Well, that I'm not really sure about that. Probably when she fell, there was some toys that the kids had left on the floor, and I think that probably caused that mark on her neck also.
In this scene, Bullock students learn that abusers will often try and speak for their partners. They also frequently blame the victim for their injuries. Though the husband never leaves the room, even during an x-ray, Gonzalez finally gets a chance to talk to the patient alone. She explains it would be impossible to sustain these types of injuries from a simple fall. Gonzalez then takes the exam one step further.
I want you to know that if there's ever anything you'd like to talk to me about, if you're ever worried that you're not in a safe place, that maybe home is not as safe as you perceive it is right now, you're always welcome to talk to me about those things.
Gonzalez ends the exam by handing her patient an emery board with a domestic violence hotline number printed on one side. She got it during a class field trip to a local battered woman's shelter. Bullock says her class helps students understand a difficult issue, one they may know little about firsthand. And for those who do, the course can help them overcome the psychological barriers that often follow domestic abuse. A first-year student in Bullock's class who asked not to be identified provides an example. Earlier in her career as a nurse, she endured severe emotional abuse from her husband, a job switch only made things worse.
It required that I was on call all the time. And so there would just be this tension, and if my beeper went off at a time he didn't want, he felt very threatened by it, and you just knew it was coming.
The abuse led to serious physical problems, but none of her doctors made the connection. She finally divorced, but says taking Bullock's class has forced her to relive some of her trauma and to reflect on how denial of her situation influenced her own bedside manner.
I can't even guess how many times I've sat in rooms with patients, never asked the question, and how many of them were going through a lot of the same things at home.
That's the type of empathy, even compassion, Bullock hopes the training will ignite. She insists that her students have to become social activists.
Absolutely, we need to be trained and appreciate the community and social issues that we're all faced with and we're all challenged to deal with. And that's an aspect of community activism that I try and stress with my students that they need to incorporate in their practice.
After completing the 10 sessions in Bullock's class, her students can also do a clinical rotation in the District of Columbia's Domestic Violence Intake Center, where they'll counsel abuse victims as they enter the court system. Rachel Jones, NPR News, Washington.